Hello and welcome to the Open Source Security Podcast with myself, Kurt Seyfried, and my partner in believing about Santa Claus, Josh Bressers.
That's right. It's the annual Christmas episode.
No, the annual Christmas spectacular.
Is it? Every year isn't a spectacular, is it?
I'd say a guy who gives out presents is pretty spectacular.
Well, but our show doesn't have to be a Christmas spectacular.
Yeah, I'm doing jazz hands right now. You can't see.
Kurt's doing jazz hands right now. We'll see. Maybe it's a spectacular, maybe it's not. Who's to say?
Maybe this is kind of like chocolate coated versus just regular cookies.
Anyway, we have a topic.
Like, it's still a cookie. That's not a bad thing, right? Like, but don't get me wrong. Like, a chocolate covered cookie is better. But if you offered me a cookie without chocolate covering, I'd still be like, cookie. Thank you.
Anyway,
it'd be like Stollen without the icing sugar. It would still be okay. But with that thick coat of icing sugar, it is better.
Okay. Moving on. So our topic this year is Santa's security supply chain.
His security supply chain or the security of his supply chain?
Who cares?
Well, okay. Without being too weird,
no.
Every toy with a battery in it is a bit suspect right now.
Yeah, for sure. There's that. Absolutely. Yeah. No, look, Santa's security supply chain is probably going to be the title because I feel like it's going to look nice when I write that down.
Okay.
How we discuss that topic, as you are probably aware, Kurt, we have a tendency to, let's say, deviate from the intended topic.
Well, because to me, Santa is one of those things, like, he's like a Fortune 100 company. Like, he is big.
Probably Fortune 1. I don't know. Does Santa make more money than Apple?
Well, remember that year I calculated the rough value of all the Christmas presents and it was like the GDP of America or something?
It was a lot.
No, sorry. I just calculated the amount of money spent on presents, right? And it was like some horrifically large number.
Well, yes. I mean, that is how it works.
And that wasn't even counting. Like, apparently people buy new cars as a air quotes Christmas present, which I'm sure is more of an excuse to get a new car than an actual Christmas present.
Probably, what, 5 years of debt?
Most cars now are on 8-year loans.
What, 8-year loans? Holy crap.
Yeah. Okay, the average price of a car in Canada right now is like 53 grand Canadian. Like, it's...
Holy crap, we have a topic to talk about.
Yes.
Santa's whatever.
Security supply chain.
A bunch of S's, right?
Yeah.
We have alliteration in this episode's title.
Yes. Can we get it to rhyme?
No.
Because then it must
be
true.
Oh, for crying out loud. This is the worst Christmas episode start ever. It's a Lego movie reference.
Come on. If it rhymes, it must be true.
Anyway, okay. So I do not understand what we're supposed to talk about today, which I hate doing because I've informed Kurt multiple times that going in blind makes for worse episodes. Okay. But the only thing I have is Kurt sent me a message, which... he assured me was somewhere in Signal and I had to dig it out, but he sends me a message that just says, this is okay. I'm going to read this for everyone. Just so you understand like what I'm dealing with here. Kurt sends, also, I have an idea for the hook for the Santa supply chain show, the de facto versus de jure standards.
Yes.
That's it. That's all I got.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
All right. What does any of that mean?
So Santa's supply chain security is provably de facto, not de jure. So it's provably based on reality, not like a written law. It's like what works, not we wrote a law and then adhered to it, right? So de facto standards are standards that are standards because everybody uses them, like Perl, right? So when it comes to SBOM, we've got CPE, Perl, and SWID, right? CPE is essentially a de facto standard that like MITRE created and then handed off to NIST, and it's only used in one sort of environment, right? The CVE database by, well,
NIST. It's used by NVD. I don't know if MITRE was ever involved in CPE.
MITRE invented CPE. Go to cp.mitre.org.
Okay.
Right? They invented it and then handed it off to NIST because it nobody cared, right? And like, the thing is, de facto standards are essentially survivor bias winners. That's why they're so good. That's why we use de facto standards, like web headers, right?
Okay.
If enough people say this web header means X and we all agree on use it that way, well, that's like English. That's what it means now. And I think the problem with de jure standards, so standards written as a law, is de facto standards grew out of a problem and somebody made a solution that was so good, everybody went, yeah, I'll use that solution. Whereas de jure standards are a bunch of people in a room who've probably never implemented this.
Yes.
Wrote a standard and went, oh, let's write an encryption standard. Hey, I've got an idea. Like, what if encryption is expensive, so we want to downgrade the encryption later? Yeah, let's add that to the standard. And then that turns out to be such a terrible idea that it actually gets removed from TLS at some point.
I mean, that does happen, yes.
And that, I think, is the fascinating thing to me about de facto versus de jure standards. And don't get me wrong, I like the idea of a de jure standard where let's make a standard before this becomes a huge problem and like try and head it off at the pass.
I'm not a fan of that, for what it's worth. Like,
well, because often it gets it wrong.
It gets it wrong all the time. And yeah, and you end up, the other problem you get, I mean, I complain about the OpenSSF scorecard project of this, yeah, is they literally made some things up. And when I asked them, like, what do we have any evidence this is good or bad? And they're like, oh, we'll find the evidence later. And I'm like, no, you won't. You're going to cherry pick the evidence that backs up the decisions you've already made. You're not going to actually look for actual evidence and then make decisions based on it.
And building on that, it's not just cherry picking the evidence. They've already framed the question and they might be asking the wrong question. Like, it's like asking open source developers, if you ask them the question, do you want to get paid for this? Well, that has a whole bunch of assumptions that they want to get paid for this, sure, or maybe they want other forms, sure, of support or whatever. And so I think that's, but on the flip side, like, we can't have, say, a nuclear or an airline industry where it's just like, yeah, we'll learn as we go. It'll work out.
I mean, well, the airline industry certainly started out like that, as did the nuclear industry. I mean, if you you can read the stories about like what happened at Los Alamos back in the early days, and it was just, it was literally bananas. I mean, and granted, it's shockingly only a couple people died, but it should have been almost certainly more than it was.
Yeah. But I think the problem with a lot of this stuff now is it's not just restricted to a research lab anymore. It's like, it goes across the planet pretty quickly.
Yeah, because it's matured as an industry. I mean,
things that we,
like,
do.
There's no Santa in this episode, Kurt. This is supposed to be the holiday spectacular episode.
So Santa is provably using de facto standards because, well, A, he's existed since like before writing.
Has he?
Yeah, Santa's old.
Is he? I don't know. You can't prove he is or isn't old, Kurt.
And it also depends on the canon. Like, does Santa, like Doctor Who, renew, or is it like just this immortal kind of guy? But the quick answer is Santa is 1,754 years old.
Did you ask ChatGPT?
I asked Google.
Oh, Google.
But like, Santa is basically shortly, you know, he was out there commercializing the birth of Christ.
Sure.
Well, I mean,
sure.
You know,
that's canon.
Yeah. Probably.
Okay. So I want to talk about the security of Santa's supply chain. What does the security of Santa's supply chain look like?
So one thing that's interesting to me is there's a lot of strategies you can use to secure your supply chains, and a lot of them don't work at certain levels of scale.
Okay.
Like, a good example would be if I want to buy a Mac laptop and make sure, you know, there's nothing like implanted in it, I can just go to the Apple store and buy one for cash.
You could do that.
And then they don't know that they're selling it to Kurt.
Right.
That doesn't work if you need to buy a million laptops. And Santa needs to buy a million laptops.
Probably.
Number two, like, you can only do statistical sampling. So, like, that whole fake titanium in airplanes thing that is going on right now.
Yes.
Like, it might be real titanium. It might.
Well, it's not you can only do. You only need to do statistical sampling, because once you're at a large scale, it would be foolish to test every single thing, but you know, if you test 10% or 5% or some percentage of everything, you're going to figure out what is happening in the larger population.
Yes, and yet here we are with the fake titanium scandal.
I mean, were they actually testing it though? Like, I don't know all the details of that scandal.
Well, and that's part of the problem is, like, there's that Japanese steel company that was apparently faking steel testing reports for 40 years.
Right, and yes, if you fake the report, like, no, it doesn't matter if they tested 100% of it, they're going to release 100% fake reports.
But that's a good example of, like, you at this scale, you can't test the steel. You have to rely on the steel maker testing it.
Yes.
And the other thing is, it's almost kind of in a weird inverse way, if like 99% of the steel makers or titanium makers are legitimately good and trustworthy, then you go, okay, let's rely on them and trust them. And then you have one that's not, and whoopsie-doodle.
Well, in this field, okay, so unrelated to Santa, I feel like if you're working with a manufacturer and they're giving you reports that they did of something, I feel like you should be also doing some level of verification in order to do this correctly. I mean, the example I'll use is, so like, there's a lot of talk these days about giving S-bombs to like your vendors, or rather your vendors giving you S-bombs, giving S-bombs to the government, like, you know, everyone passing around S-bombs. And one of the things though is going to be, you're going to get this data from a company or an organization or whoever. You're also going to need to do some sort of verification on it. Like you can't just take it and just be like, oh, it's correct. No, no. You're going to have to check it. And now, granted, maybe you check them all. It could be automated, whatever. I don't know. But like, this is part of that process, right?
And this is exactly like Six Sigma, where there's a really good video about making video cards and how, you know, they get like these tapes of components, capacitors, resistors, whatever. And they, you know, they test 10. And then if all 10 clear, good. But if like one fails, okay, now we got to test 100 or whatever. Like, and then if like seven fail, okay, we're throwing that out and whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Because part of the challenge is at that scale, you're building this thing that costs $1,000 or $2,000. And if you put like a broken one penny component in, the whole thing's just garbage.
Right. Right.
And that is, I think, I keep coming back to all this stuff in the modern world is so complicated.
Yes.
There's so many parts. And it's not like I can build a car with a missing piece anymore, because it's going to be like, three wheels, it's not going to work.
That's
right. A couple of capacitors, the car won't start. Like,
okay. So now here's the question. And this, so obviously Santa has a massive supply chain, and we're talking about hardware, software, raw materials,
business process,
the process of it all,
delivery and logistics.
The logistics they've got sorted. It's a dude in a sleigh with deer in a bag. Like, it's fine.
That's last mile delivery.
Yeah.
Santa solved last mile delivery, but what about all the inputs?
Oh, you mean how do they get it to the bag?
Yeah.
That's an excellent question.
Right? Does he just do all the logistics? Because
I assume his totally volunteer elf labor just carries the packages to the bag. Right.
Yeah. Or is it like all those movies where they have a conveyor belt just feeding this enormous magical bag?
That's on Futurama. Yeah. They've got conveyor belts.
Well, and the scary Tom Hanks movie.
Do they? Yeah, they do. That's right. Because a kid gets stuck on the Polar Express, where Tom Hanks plays like all the characters.
Polar. Yeah. That's just a horror show on so many levels.
It's so weird. It's like Uncanny Valley to a next level.
Not even that, but like the reaction in Germany where it's like, oh, so we're spying on all the children because we did that twice. It did not work out.
Wait, Santa's been spying on children for hundreds of years. That's not new.
No, and that's why, like, you know.
I mean, in Germany, they have a freaking dude who like puts you in a sack and beats you if you're bad. Like,
only if you're bad, though.
Only if you're bad.
Yeah, that's Krampus. Right. That's fine.
Actually, there's a very funny, there's a show called, I think it's Kunk on History in the UK. And there was a meme I saw where she was like talking about, you know, good children versus bad children and what the presents they get. And she's like, actually, it turns out that the bad children get presents too. It's only the poor children who don't. It's like, ooh, that one's on the nose.
And also, just to clarify, Krampus also might eat the bad children or take them to hell.
I was discussing this with my children today. I'm like, if you were a truly bad child, just beating you and giving you back, like, come on, that accomplishes nothing. Like, take them away, you know?
Yeah.
that's how it needs to be done. But anyway, okay, so that is interesting. I guess I never considered the whole North Pole, we need to get the stuff to the last mile delivery aspect of it.
It has to be wrapped.
There's plenty of examples of having groups of, we'll say, voluntary labor wrapping the presents at the North Pole. I'm not as concerned about that. But then there's also the aspect of sourcing materials. You were just talking about sourcing things like for video cards, where you do all the testing and making sure the parts are okay. I will say, all in all, I feel like I have never gotten a present from Santa Claus that malfunctioned. I'm sure it happens, but I feel like it's the quality and the level of, we'll say, QA is very high.
He's got some good Six Sigma Kaizen process going on. Continuous improvement.
Right. And I mean, again, the voluntary labor, no doubt, assists with all of that.
I also can't help but wonder if elves, because they're Christmas elves, right? And elves, as we know from virtually all lore, have, you know, they're magical. There's something special. They're more than human, right? And so, for example, like there's time dilation issues and things like that. So I can't help but wonder if that's part of the reason that he uses Christmas elves, right?
I don't know. If you look at the movie Elf, Buddy the Elf is quite good at certain activities, we'll say. Just having lived with the elves.
The sugar intake makes sense because, like, that's a lot of calories to burn.
So I read a funny thing. I guess when Will Ferrell did that scene where he put like the maple syrup on the spaghetti and ate it, I guess he yarfed it all right back up, which doesn't surprise me at all.
Some of those actors, like what is his name? Chris, the guy from Parks and Rec.
I don't know.
There's like a scene where he apparently ate like 6 cheeseburgers in total.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like he apparently, Chris, not Hemsworth. What's his name? Chris.
Oh, the guy who is Star-Lord. Pratt. Chris Pratt, right?
Yeah, Chris Pratt. Like apparently ate like a bunch of cheeseburgers.
Oh, that's
like,
funny.
A lot. And, you know, there's just some of these method actors like Aragorn slept with his horse and sword.
Yeah. You got to do it. I mean, I get that. There was.
Yeah.
What else? I heard another actor one time told a funny story. Like when you see people drinking beer, it's usually apple juice. And he was talking about how like there was one time he was just the scene over and over and over. He's like, I drank like a gallon of apple juice. And you're in your spot. You got your makeup and all the lighting.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, I had to pee really bad. And like, you can't just get up and go pee, you know, like you have to stay there.
Yeah. Run a tube into the floor.
Yeah. Right. Right. But anyway. Okay.
Oh, actually, you know what? That raises a good question. Because, like, so astronauts have to wear diapers and stuff because they're in, like, a spacesuit.
Right.
And, like, Santa's in a sled. And, like, is he using people's bathrooms?
I don't know if I've seen any episodes or any movies.
He's eating a lot of milk and cookies.
There is a lot of milk and cookies.
If he eats milk and cookies at every house, like, just from a fundamental physics, like, stuff in, stuff out.
Maybe Santa's digestive system works similar to his sack, which has infinite size.
So then he just goes home and destroys the toilet?
It could be. I don't know.
Is it like those people who eat, like, what's that British guy, Beard Meets Food? You know, where he eats like 20 pounds of food or whatever and is sitting?
I've never seen this.
So he's this famous guy, Beard Meets Food, and he goes and eats like 10, 20 pounds of food. Like, he does all these food challenges and just wins them. And the deal is he's got his own bathroom at home and his wife doesn't clean it. It's his responsibility.
Anyway, I didn't need to know any of that information just now.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. Santa Claus, his supply chain, I want to focus on security as well. So we just recently talked about the Salt Typhoon whole debacle. We have various governments infiltrating the critical infrastructure of other governments. You can only assume that every intelligence agency on the planet has done their best to infiltrate Santa's infrastructure in some way.
They better be. That's what I'm paying taxes for, right? Like just knowing who's naughty and who's nice, that's, you know, and knowing their home address.
But now at the same time, the naughty and nice list, to my knowledge, has never been leaked. We've never heard of ransomware gangs who managed to break into the North Pole.
Yeah.
So I feel like their security of their infrastructure is slightly better than the infrastructure security of everyone else.
The thing is, though, if you look at it, it's always done on paper. And there is something to be said for just doing stuff on paper because there's
only in some movies. I mean, the Futurama Santa uses a computer, I think. There's certainly computers.
Yeah, but there's actually been a couple articles in the last few years about intelligence agencies going back to typewriters and paper for like really sensitive stuff.
Have they heard of Project Gunman by chance?
Project Gunman, yeah.
That was when the Soviets put the listening devices in the IBM typewriters at the Moscow embassy, right?
Well, or like they were retrieving the ribbons, blah, blah, blah.
I don't know about that.
The typewriter ribbons, right? Well, the typewriter ribbons, because they physically have an imprint of the letter.
They do, but Project Gunman had like listening devices embedded in the typewriters. It was wild. Amazing.
Well, and that's why, like, if you have an embassy in a foreign country, you buy all your office supplies at home and truck them with you.
Which they did.
Yeah. But I think with this, I think a big part of that list is that the list is on that magical scroll of paper.
Is it? I guess.
Well, it's always only ever shown us as a scroll.
Even if the list, right?
Yeah.
You're still talking about an individual who is sourcing materials and stuff from all over the world. They have to have some way to track the supply chain at that level. Are they tracking all of their materials on paper?
Potentially.
I mean, maybe.
I mean, and also I would assume the elves are doing this.
Well, obviously, right. They're the totally voluntary laborers Santa has.
Like, the thing that really I worry and wonder about is recalls. Because Santa, like, statistically just has to deliver stuff at some point that ends up being, like, lawn darts or something, right?
I mean...
Well, it's like every time I walk into Costco, like, if you pay attention, when you walk into or out of your Costco, there's usually a giant wall with all the product recalls printed on it, which I love how nobody pays attention because...
You don't have to because they email you because they know what you bought.
Sometimes, not always.
I've always gotten emails from them. Every time there's a recall on something I bought from them, And 99% of the time, I've already eaten it. So
I know, like, right? I got like, that recall for the figs, and I'm like, I guess mine didn't have salmonella, because here I am.
I know. I get that. Yeah, that happens all the time. Yep. No, I did. What did I had to bring something back there once. I remember that. I did not. It was something really weird, though. It wasn't food. It was, oh, I can't remember now. Anyway, whatever. So how, okay. So you're suggesting Santa is keeping track of all of the materials on paper.
Which would actually make sense why he's never emailed us a product recall.
Maybe. Now, at the same time, the question is, so if Santa has an Apple laptop, did he acquire that from Apple, or did his elves, like, make an Apple laptop, illegally brand the Apple laptop, and now it is a counterfeit device so good it can pass off as the original?
Because as we discussed in the past, when U.S. Customs Border Patrol would seize it, right? Because the branding issues.
No, he totally bypasses Customs and Border Patrol, right? Santa is basically like doing vigilante deliveries,
yeah,
bypassing all laws and rules affecting the border. I think we discussed the border thing at some point in the past, rather extensively, actually.
Yeah, with the deer and everything.
Right, yeah, because he's flying deer across the border. Like, yeah. Come on, this... Anyway, so ignoring all of those laws. So is Santa purchasing legitimate material, like goods, or is he creating counterfeit materials?
I believe he is actually now, I think probably at some point he was making stuff, but now people want branded things.
That's fair.
And like, they want a Gucci handbag, not the Santa Gucci handbag.
Yeah, I don't want Timu Santa.
Yeah. Like... Yeah, exactly. Timu. I've actually never been to that website, now that I think about it. I've heard about it a few times. Is it like AliExpress, but worse?
But worse, a lot worse. And there's also Wish.com, I think, is the other one.
Yeah. Oh, every time they do like the PC build off Wish.com, I'm just like, whoa, that is...
Kurt's talking about the LLTT, which is the most famous Canadian on YouTube. Linus always does like these crazy builds.
I'm not gonna... I was just trying to think of a more famous Canadian, and I'm like...
You know I'm right. But yeah, it's funny because Linus will do these builds where like he buys all the parts from like AliExpress or Timu or Wish.
Yeah.
Or one time he did one where it was like, I will, like, he only bought the cheapest part he could find on Amazon for a given like type of search in.
Oh, he did some eBay ones too.
Yeah, like they're wild for sure. I like when they have to do the challenges where they say like, you have $500 to build a computer, and then Linus gets a bunch of free stuff because everyone knows who he is.
So like, yeah, well, they made him more, they increased their theatrical budget and did makeup and stuff and to make it more interesting.
Oh yeah, that time they put him in disguise and everyone still knew who he was.
Him and Luke.
Anyway.
Well, and I like how the guy, he's like, so did you, he's like, yeah, when you, I knew.
Of course they knew.
He's hood famous in
Canada.
Not,
right. They're not good actors. Like, anyway. Okay. So we're going to assume Santa is sourcing most of this stuff from the actual supplier of the thing. Okay.
He has to, because it's legit. Like Apple has cryptographic controls on phone parts and stuff. Like,
that's true, where, actually. Santa, like, would have to crack all of Apple's encryption to have the fake, what do they call the enclaves built into this?
Well, actually, no, he wouldn't have to crack their encryption, because literally Santa would just phone you and be like, hey, you're on the nice list. Do you want to be on the naughty list, or do you want to give me that encryption key?
Be a shame if something happened to that.
Yeah.
So you think Santa is bribing Apple employees?
No. He's not bribing. He's just saying, you know, it would be unfortunate if you were to end up on the naughty list.
Although, so in all seriousness on that topic, in the case of for sure Apple, maybe not other places, the keys that are used for all of the cryptographic functionality, I guarantee, never leave like HSMs and places like that. I bet you, even if you wanted to, you could not extract those keys in any meaningful way.
I would hope so. Like, because if they're not air gapping that stuff on HSMs, they're doing it wrong.
I don't know if they're air gapped, but I suspect they're well protected on hardware devices.
I would air gap it, because that's something also you can be doing in batch mode.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean,
right. This is an email.
We'll never know, because goodness knows, like, Apple is never going to tell anyone. But now at the same time, I guarantee there are manufacturers where the secret keys for whatever they're doing lives on some dude's laptop.
They're checked into GitHub. So yeah, like, we know.
Yeah,
like,
some of them are for sure.
Yeah, that ship sailed.
So anyway, okay. So we can say Santa is buying official merchandise from vendors.
Well, no, I don't know that he's buying it. I think he might be sourcing a lot of it at cost or below cost.
It fell off the truck?
Well, a part of it, no, but like there are times as a manufacturer where I, you know, like Apple used to sell into the educational market cheap with the premise being kids grow up on Apple and then when they become adults, they buy Apple.
Yeah, because we all had Apple IIs when we were kids.
Yeah.
Now they don't do that because Chromebooks, yo.
Yeah. And so I suspect for a lot of manufacturers, there's that aspect of this is like a premium gifting time. And, you know, like James Bond wears whatever brand of watches he wears. I know that's like a multi-year deal.
I have no idea. Is it
Omega or Oyster or something? I know nothing about watches other than there's like Swatch and like...
We're not going to listen to you guess watches.
Anyways, so I have a suspicion though that a lot of this is like those kind of free giveaways or below at cost giveaways to, you know, to build the brand.
Okay, maybe. But now you are acquiring stuff, be it part of it could be software, you've got hardware, you've got
just handbags, bikes, ponies.
How are you verifying the security of the items you are bringing in, especially in the case of Santa, where he's bringing in so much stuff, you can't possibly keep track of it all easily?
I would assume it's either a combination of magic or like, you know, those fancy x-ray like machines you see on the border patrol things.
What good is that for verifying the authenticity of an Apple laptop?
Well, the other thing is you pick it up at the factory, you pick it up at the thing, which isn't 100% because, for example, in China, there will be factories that will just run like a third shift and make. See, and this comes into the question of what is counterfeit? Like if a Chinese factory runs two shifts and makes product X and ships it out, you know, to the whatever official vendor and then has like a third shift run the exact same stuff with like, let's just assume it's exactly the same, like at the atomic level, is it counterfeit or not?
I mean, it is because the brand name on it is, it's a whole thing.
But I'm just saying, or it's like that whole thing around air quotes, fake passports, where if North Korea issues a air quotes, fake passport to somebody in a fake name, is it a fake passport? Well, it's an actual official government document. They just fudged on the data on it. So yeah, it's not correct. Is it fake? Well, it's an official passport, but with fake info, right? And I feel that's kind of like maybe what's happening with Santa. Oh, you cracked it, man. The elves go in at night and run a third shift.
So you think the elves are breaking into factories and producing things unbeknownst to the factory owners and then functionally stealing all of the material that's then given out by Santa as Christmas presents?
Yeah.
I wouldn't argue with that.
Well, and or they bring the material in themselves. Because, okay, let's be real. Santa has clearly cracked logistics.
Sure.
Like, you can't argue with that. Like, he delivers presents in a 24-hour span globally.
It's true.
Like, the dude he's got logistics figured out.
A lot of crowdsourcing going on, we'll say.
Yeah, yes. Well, and hey, that works, you know?
Okay. I also wonder, though, so here's my other question. How much of the software used in the North Pole, as well as the various...
Oh, it's all open source.
It's got... there's at least 90%, right?
Yeah.
For sure.
It's provably open source because have you ever seen an enterprise resource planning software deployment that did not end in tears and overruns?
That's a good point, actually. That's a very good point.
Can you imagine Santa going to SAP and being like, what's this going to cost me? And SAP be like, yeah, we can deliver that in 7 months. No problem.
That sales guy would have a field day.
Yeah.
Like, you are correct that when you purchase enterprise software, it is definitely an adventure. I would agree with that. But now, at the same time, one of the challenges that you'd have trying to run an organization the size of Santa's is you can say he cracked logistics, but if you look at every large organization, be it a company or a government or anything, we'll say there is a certain amount of confusion and mismanagement will be the polite terms I use.
Here's the thing. Santa has a clearly defined one-sentence mission statement. Deliver presents to children on Christmas Day or on Christmas Eve.
Sure, sure.
And that adds a clarity of like, well, is what I'm doing in aid of this or not? And I think that's one of the challenges with a lot of organizations. It's like at Red Hat. What was the Red Hat mission statement? Come on, we were both there for like at least 10 years and I vaguely know what it was, but I'd have to look it up to quote it. So and it was something about being like the leading open source company enabler.
Well, when Jim Whitehurst took over, it was to be the defining technology company of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Or 21st century, I forget which century.
Oh, well, if it was of the 20th century, then that would explain what went wrong.
It was probably 21st then. Yeah, right. Yeah. No kidding. And then before that, when Zulik was there, I can't remember what the mission statement was.
You're almost right. To be the catalyst in communities of customers, right. Contributors, and partners creating better technology the open source way.
Oh, that came after that. That's like the third one.
Oh, yeah, that was the watered down one.
Yeah, they changed it again after a while.
Apparently we have a book of Red Hat now, our shared history, purpose, and culture. I never heard of this.
Well, Jim Whitehurst also wrote a book, The Open...
I remember that because they gave it to us, remember?
Yeah, they did. It was a fair
probably
book.
Probably because it juiced sales and got him to the top of the selling list.
Of course it did.
Anyways, but that's the point, right? Like, a lot of organizations don't have a truly clear purpose. And I find that the organizations that, like, almost do a simpler, more concrete thing, kind of everybody's in alignment with it. You know, it's like when you're at a restaurant making hamburgers and fries to feed people, it's like, well, that's what we're doing. We're making hamburgers and fries to feed people.
I mean, there is something to be said about having a simple, well understood mission in what you're trying to do. And I do think this is something that catches a lot of businesses and gets them in trouble, is they don't actually know what they're doing.
My favorite thing is when you ask somebody, what does your company do? And they can't clearly answer it, you know? And then there's some, like, a great example is Liebherr. It's like, we make cranes and heavy equipment. And then, like, they have their Liebherr crane day where we have a crane lift, a crane lift, a crane lift, a crane. Like, that's what we do. Here it is. Right? And it's, but that's subtle, because it's like, we make cranes, but the subtle part is like, we also make this really fancy software so you can pick a crane up with a crane up with a crane up and not have the whole thing fall down and end in tears and like, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's German engineering excellence, blah, 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 right?
Germans do know how to engineer. Anyway, I feel like we keep avoiding the Santa supply chain.
And this is the thing I also respect about Santa. Santa has... again, multiple supply chains, because he's dealing with different cultures, different regulatory frameworks.
Yep.
You know, people are getting all natural toys and some people are getting plastic stuff and some people are getting switches or a pony.
True. That's true. He does deliver living creatures, which is its own set of logistical problems.
Yeah. Oh, dude, if you knew what it takes to ship a horse somewhere.
I do not, and I don't want to. I'm sure it's difficult.
There's a whole industry for it, because like racehorses and stuff. And
I have no doubt. Moving a live animal of that size is no doubt difficult.
Moving a dumb live animal that's prone to panicking because it's a prey animal.
That's true. They panic, don't they?
Oh, anyway. God, they panic all the time. My favorite is like that one of the two police horses in Britain, and like they changed the crosswalk painting slightly, and The both horses just freak right out because they changed the painting on the crosswalk.
Wow, that's funny.
But, well, I've had that experience, like, where the horse, like, literally, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. And then 2 years later, like, there's a plastic bag lying next to the thing and the horse just flips out.
Wow. I don't know anything about horses and I...
Okay, they have a brain the size of a walnut.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean...
No, they do.
Okay.
Like that's how big their brain is. It's the size of a walnut and they're 1,000 pounds of prey creature.
That's true. That's true. Things eat horses.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Anyway, okay. So we've been talking about this for like 30 minutes now, and I think we need to kind of start wrapping this one up. So Santa's supply chain security, I feel like the answer is he clearly has it figured out, but we have no idea what it is because it works. Yep. And I feel like there's not tons of counterfeit items that I'm aware of.
Yep.
And it seems to function in a way that is... impressive security, because to the best of our knowledge, we have not seen leaks of the Naughty and Nice list.
Has he ever been like, oh, Christmas is delayed a week this year because of that cyber thing?
That's true, actually. That is exactly what would happen to many other organizations. But we've never heard of Christmas being delayed due to a cyber attack.
It wasn't even delayed for world wars.
That is true. That's a good point. And many things were delayed due to the world wars.
Yeah, just a few. Well, you had a president with 3 terms. Well, 2.5.
No, he had more than that. It was like 4, wasn't it?
What? Was it 4? I thought it was...
Yeah, I think it was 4. Then they decided that's too many.
Yeah. Initial 2 terms. Oh, he had 3rd and 4th. Wow, yeah. Good old FDR.
Yeah, yeah. He was... I mean, who knew? Give people what they want. They keep voting for you. Like. Anyway.
So, I think the takeaway here is that de jure standards are... a good idea, but they're often wrong because they meet reality, and reality, you need practice and time to understand reality. And that's why de facto standards tend to be so good, is because they deal with reality and account for reality. And they're also a bit more flexible because they're not so written down. And so I think what we need to do as a society is really start being a bit more flexible, because I see a lot of regulations and laws written down that were absolutely correct 20 years ago. And then everybody got pocket computers, or we decided to start plumbing with PECs or whatever, and the world changed, and the standards and laws also need to change, but they don't.
I mean, this is a hard problem, actually, and I don't think it's as simple as what you just said. And I think, well, I'll put it in the context of Santa because it's the Christmas episode and I want to. When we think of an organization like North Pole Inc., or whatever we're going to call it, right? It is obvious that in an instance like that, in order to actually operate on the global scale we're talking about, dealing with all of the regulations and all of the standards and all the laws would be practically impossible, which is why Santa is probably the largest lawmaker on the planet, or lawbreaker on the planet, right? Yeah. Because he's violating the import laws, he's violating border protection laws, he's violating countless things, right? Like, we're talking about a dude who's...
Well, he has to get his job done.
That's the thing. He can't not, right? And now, at the same time, we all like vigilante Santa, so we're going to be like, whatever, Santa, that's great. But there are also countless instances scattered throughout history where you had corporations that were like, paint goes great in vegetables, everybody. Let's just put that in there. Like, we don't need to worry about what they look like. We'll color them green.
Yeah.
You know, or they're like, lead. Lead is great. Like, let's just get that added to school menus.
It makes things sweet and shiny. Yum. Right.
Yes. The best food additive. And here's the thing. Like, I understand government overhead can be painful and it sucks. And I do think we are at one of those times right now where the existing laws and frameworks and regulations have not been keeping pace with technology. And I think keeping them pace with technology is certainly difficult.
Well, and cultural change.
For sure. 100%. And so we have some real problems. We have problems around intellectual property. We have problems around, you know, sourcing materials for various items and products. We have problems around like securing software, securing computers. There's all this stuff. And so I'm not going to say that we should like abandon du jour and like we should just grow our standards. Because at the same time, sometimes when you let things like grow, we'll say grow naturally, and I'll put that in air quotes, it's like the guy with the most money got to make the rules, because sometimes that's how it works.
We should maybe have better feedback loops so that we don't have to write legislation perfect the first time around, because we know we're going to get it wrong. And we iterate. Like, and I think, again, this is why open source one is, because in a commercial company, if you want to make a change, you have to do a whole change request process.
Yes.
In open source, actually, statistically, since the vast majority of open source projects are one developer, if they decide to do it that way, that's how it's being done.
Yes, that's right.
And for a lot of software projects below a certain size, convincing them if it's a good idea is actually usually not that hard.
It depends. I've seen it go both ways.
It's usually a personality thing, but in organizations, it becomes an organizational thing, and it's almost always a problem.
Yes, I'll agree with that. I think seeing changes happen in large companies is painful, for sure.
Watching Red Hat Enterprise Linux stay the same hurts my heart. It hurts my heart that Red Hat Enterprise Linux 9 is basically the same as... And I'm not saying Red Hat Enterprise Linux. I'm saying Red Hat Linux, the thing that came on CDs 20 years ago in the Best Buy store or up here in Future Shop.
It's the same basic idea, yes.
It's, if you blindfolded somebody and like, it would, it's, yeah. Like, yeah, the installer is a little more polished and it might not blow up your monitor, but basically it's the same.
It's packages installed on a computer. That could be an interesting topic. Because I think there are unique aspects to that where I think in some ways that is a good thing, but I have many thoughts.
Here's what I want, and this is something some people at Red Hat were pushing for. I want a containerized operating system, because a perfect example right now is I'm using Claude Desktop with their Model Context Protocol, which is clever. It just has the desktop application run stuff as you, like web search or GitHub or whatever. I really don't want that running all over my system. I want that containerized, and I can't. I can't easily essentially have like a virtual machine or container or whatever running this particular set of workloads in a constrained environment. There's no easy way to do that currently.
That sounds like a problem with Claude, not with Red Hat.
No. It's more in general. For example, I run a web browser. I want to have some web browsing where I'm doing it as Kurt, and some web browsing where I'm doing it as Kurt, and it's more constrained because I'm having to go look at some dodgy websites to do some research about security stuff.
That's what virtual machines are for, yo.
Yeah, but they don't communicate with each other very well. They don't, it's a lot of overhead. It's, yep. And the management of it is yep. not great.
That's how it works. And you it's know? Probably never going to change.
And that makes me sad because it could.
But no, there's no, again, this is a topic for yeah. another day because I don't think there's a market for what you just said.
Well, no, there's a market, but it's like 17 people.
It's very small. Yes. Anyway.
Yeah. It's okay. Like a bunch of people who complain about security on Mastodon.
So here's how I want to end this. Santa's supply chain security.
Yeah.
All in all, go vigilante Santa.
Yeah.
And it's clear there's tons of YOLO. So well done, sir.
Well, and you know what? It's also worked out for the open source world.
You're comparing the open source world to Santa?
Yeah.
That's fair.
It's a bunch of people doing stuff that generally turns out to be okay.
All of the open source developers are the elves.
Yeah.
And they are doing the work for all of the corporations.
Yeah, they're doing free work. They're giving it away. They're actually trying to make the world a slightly better place.
Oh my goodness, yes.
They're basically Santa. Or slash elves.
They're not Santa. They're the elves. Yeah. And yeah. then the giant corporations taking their work and getting yeah. all the credit are the...
Well, no. Taking their work, covering in lead paint, and then...
They are the Santas in disguise.
Like, I love the fact that, like, all these open source developers get hate email because their name or email address appears in an open source license in somebody's car or something. And, like... Mercedes doesn't have front and center like bugs at mercedes.com or something.
So the only person who's ever complained about that is Daniel Stenberg.
Yep.
And he does others, curl
for sure.
Well, no. Daniel is special because yeah. actually I listened to an episode of a podcast with him. I'll try to find it. I don't yeah. remember what it was anymore. But anyway, the reason this happens is years and years ago, I did not know this. This was, he told the story years and years ago. He had the Apache 2 license. He changed the Apache 2 license for curl. So curl mm-hmm. has its own open source license yeah. and he put his email address in the license.
Yeah. You don't so want to do that.
His email address. That is why he gets these crazy emails. Yep. Cause in all of the, like the licenses, the car manufacturers yep. are putting in the manuals and stuff. Daniel's email address is yeah. in the license.
Yeah.
So that was clearly a silly mistake.
I know for a fact other people get this because, for example, the DPO Cloud Security Alliance gets at least one or two emails every once in a while from people who are not doing well and looking for some weird security stuff that's being done to them or whatever. And same thing when we ran the Buffy Overflow answer column at the security portal, like back in the 90s. Again, people having a bad... Yeah, it's just... There's people who just don't understand what they're looking for or asking for, and there's an email address. Maybe
sure.
they'll help.
Oh, yeah, that happens, for sure.
And what drives me nuts is the companies don't make it easier. Anyways, that's a whole different show, yep. actually. And yep. that's actually a paper that I'm going to make you work on with me.
We'll see.
The AI slop thing. No, we'll see.
Yeah. I'm very busy and lazy, Kurt. Anyway.
Well, that's why we're making the AI do it, duh.
We'll make the elves do it.
Yeah, no, I'm making the AI do it. Why wouldn't
AI
I?
Is not elves.
This is that's business writing. This isn't maybe, Shakespeare.
Maybe, no, I'm not getting into that with you right now because yeah. I have many thoughts on the quality of AI written papers. Anyway, I'm ending this show.
Yeah.
Thank you everyone for listening. Merry mm-hmm. Christmas. This will come out right before Christmas. So I'm yeah. very excited about that. So ho, 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 everybody. You go to opensourcesecuritypodcast.com, find the show notes, use the pound OSS podcast hashtag and Mastodon. Kurt, Merry Christmas, man.
You too. Thanks everybody. And have a happy new year or a happy Kwanzaa or whatever the heck it is you celebrate or don't celebrate.
That's right. That's right.
You know, if you just want to sit alone and be quiet and chill with your whatever, that's cool too.
Exactly. Awesome. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.